Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back with Digital Divination, episode 33. That means we're a third of the way to our goal, right?
Sweet. We've made it. I mean, I made it a third of the way, right?
Yes, a third of the way. And, you know, this is also a third of what the temperature is outside.
Oh, my goodness. It's less than a third of what the temperature yes. is for me. Ooh.
Yeah, what is it out there in... Incarnation.
Oh, I don't know what it is this minute, but I know we were up to 10, I want to say 106.
Wow.
No, we're 106 right now, actually. So we were a little higher than this. We must have been as high as, I want to say 111.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
You know, out here in Camino, it's a bit cooler. So we were only about 101. We're about 10 degrees cooler.
Whew.
So, but luckily we have our ductless AC going, and it's just been able to keep up and keep it at a very reasonable temperature inside. And then, as you remember, the basement's quite a bit cooler even without the AC.
It's absolutely
pretty good. Yes, and you guys have three AC units, I hear.
We do. We've got two in the house to keep the lower level cool. We have them both window units that are keeping the lower level of the house cool. We don't go onto the upper level of the house. That is the sun's domain, and no mortal may tread in the domain of the sun. So everybody's sleeping on the lower floor and all that. And in the office that I have that I'm in right now, which is right above our garage, I have a kind of a window unit. It's one of the boxy machines that has a vent that plugs into that sort of shoots out of the window. Mm-hmm. That I actually got from Scott Keim, who's one of our players.
Yeah.
And that has served me really well most of the time. It's just not enough to keep up with this heat. It's got a little temperature gauge on the front that is currently informing me that it is 94 degrees in here.
Wow.
So it's substantially cooler than it is outside. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I certainly can't complain. But I'm not, you know, like my wife can kind of pick up her laptop and move to wherever the coldest spot of the house is in order to work. But I've got sort of a bigger setup, for all of my piezo work, and I can't move it. It's on the desk that it is. So I'm sort of stuck here.
Well, maybe it's time to get a new laptop and make sure, well, you have everything on digital anyway. So. Can't you conceivably do that?
True. Conceivably, yes. But I work best when I've got sort of this multi-screen setup because so much of what I do relates to words on a page. Mm-hmm. I've got a big monitor to do my work on and then another monitor that's sort of turned vertically. So it's the shape of a page that I can actually put a page up. I've got one up right now for one of the Adventure Path things I'm doing, right? Here's how this is going to lay out on the page with the borders and the images and all that. Mm-hmm. And just being able to see it and be able to see it very closely and very large is very helpful for me to do my work.
Yeah, you know, when you do some remodeling work, you ought to think about putting better insulation and new windows in that office of yours.
You know, that's not a bad idea. We've actually been thinking about how we do that. How to plumb the room that it's sort of right on top of. And anyway, so we've thought a little bit about how we're going to remodel this place. But it doesn't help right now, right?
Yes.
It may help to the degree we're all later talking about, oh, do you remember when it hit that 111 degrees that one day and everybody thought it was just so memorable and strange, and now it happens all the time. And, you know, but that first time it was such a big deal. Yeah. I will definitely need something between now and then.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been this hot ever. So the likelihood that it will happen again, unfortunately, is probably ever increasing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah.
But we've broken records 3 days in a row. I mean, we broke the record on Saturday, and then we broke Saturday's record Sunday and broke Sunday's record today. It's ooh, we're real record breakers around here.
We are, but I don't. What's the temperature going to be like tomorrow?
I never thought these words would come out of my mouth when living in the Pacific Northwest. So it'll only be 97, so it'll be nice.
Wow. Yeah, it's Deb was saying it's supposed to be 75 here tomorrow.
Oh my goodness, it is way cooler by the water. Yeah. That'll be nice.
It's usually 10 to 15, and it must be even more so. I think they've been underestimating it, because wherever their station is, we've been getting higher temperatures than what it's reading. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't.
By where you happen to be.
Right. We're right where we're at, and no trees around us, you know, so. But solar cells
the sun
like it.
Kind of pounds a little bit harder. And
yeah. So besides the weather, I hear there's been some exciting stuff in the Lundin household going on.
There is.
With the head of the household.
Yeah, right now. So I'm kind of excited today. The word came down about my promotion at Paizo. I'm moved into management with Paizo. Still doing the same Adventure Path stuff I'm doing, but I am now a manager of the Adventure Path line and the Lost Omens line. So sort of our adventure and lore stuff. Things that aren't the rules, things that aren't organized play is under my purview, and I'm really excited about it.
So what does that, so you're doing your own stuff, and then who are you managing, or what are you managing?
Right now it's the Who. I had been working alongside Patrick Greeny as mm-hmm. the other Pathfinder Adventure Path developer, and I'm now his manager. And then the two people that are running the Lost Omens line very well, Luis Losa and Eleanor Farron, are both just great at what they do, and they are both under me now. They report to me now. And so I get to help them make the kind of lore books that they really want to be creating and sort of make those go.
Cool. So how is this going to balance out, you know, all this new responsibility with your huge political ambitions too?
Well, you know, I don't know, right? How do I get stuff done in a day? I don't even know that on most days, much less, you know, any other day that happens. I have been tailing out my freelance obligations. I had kind of a long weekend this weekend trying to finish up, get to a milestone of a third-party adventure that I'm very excited about. It's one of those great writing projects where at the beginning you sort of have an idea how you're going to handle it, but you're not 100% sure. And the more you work on it, the more excited you are to be working on it. Right. Mm-hmm, and it just becomes more and more awesome the ideas are firing. And you're like, oh, I can add this and I can add this. I can even go this far. Ooh, wait, better ask my developer before I go that far. So that's been really, really good. It's been a really good feeling, but I do have to say that once I've got my second to last project and then my last project wrapped up, everything will be, I guess. I think I'll be done with the freelance stuff.
Not forever,
for the time being.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about your political career progressing now.
I don't know if we've said that before. No, I'm running for the local school board. I've got my three kids are in the local school district, and so I'm aware that the existing school board, it's five people, and I think only one of the five has a child that's even in the school district anymore. The rest of them have all graduated, aged out. The incumbent I'm running against, I think, has had I want to say it's been more than a decade since she's had a child in the high school. So she's got I know she's got at least a granddaughter that's in
right,
the school
yes.
now.
How do you know that?
Because it's my daughter's best friend, and her granddaughter. I mean, this is a small town. It's just a really small town. Everybody knows each other. And her granddaughter's over at our house most days, right? And they went out of town, I want to say, for 4 or 5 days, but I don't think that this little girl, I don't think she'd done much more than hop out of the car after their 5-day trip before she came running over to see what my daughter was doing, and they wanted to play, and she wanted to talk about everything she'd done, and my daughter's talking about everything she'd done, and anyway, it's great. It's fun. Certainly with the summer here and kids having a lot more freedom and running around, the pandemic with in the stages where it feels like it's really lifting, I'm back to the pre-pandemic sort of way of having our household run, which is every time we sit down to dinner, we roll 1d8 to see how many kids we're going to have around the dinner table. And even if we happen to roll a 3, it's not necessarily my 3 kids, right? Some of my kids could be over somebody else's house having dinner while other kids are here in my place. And it's just a fun way to run things.
Yeah, neat. And now, how much time is that? I mean, if you were, I'm not familiar at all with kind of local political positions.
Frankly, it probably ought to be more time than I'm putting into it. The thing that I'm doing right now is familiarizing myself on the issues, building a website. I've got a Gmail. I need to be ordering campaign signs and things like that. There are a number of filings, very extensive filings with the county, mostly to avoid corruption, right? They want to know all the sources of my income and how I'm going to spend it, what I'm going to spend it on in the course of the campaign, where I have real estate holdings everywhere, not just Washington State. Yeah, it was pretty onerous and it was on a pretty tight deadline. I have a little bit of leeway because it is just me running against this incumbent. We don't have to, nobody's going to be voting in the August primaries for either of us. We both automatically go to the November general election. And so after the August primaries, when it sort of settles out who's going to be running for the other positions, the other open position, it's going to be on the school board. Then it's going to be a little more eager and fervent campaigning, I feel.
And do you somehow perhaps see this whole procedure ending up is flavor in an adventure path down the road?
Yes, absolutely. I had one of the things that really struck with me when I first started at Paizo, I had written and turned in the War for the Crown, my adventure for the War for the Crown adventure path, which is sort of a noble intrigue, political intrigue sort of story set in our land of feuding nobles and things. But, and so when I came to work, I'd already turned in my adventure for that. And I think I went to work right away on the adventure back matter of the adventure right after it. Anyway, I sort of came in the middle of War for the Crown. One of the things that we used to do is talk about at the beginning of the adventure paths, we would have a foreword, which was really an opportunity for the developer to speak very sort of intimately to the people. And one of the ones just before I'd picked it up, Crystal Frazier, who is the developer, had said, standing for your beliefs in a political election and sort of this back and forth sort of political intrigue is really important. And sometimes it's a lot more important than you can even know, because she revealed that in her local town, the difference for the election of mayor, which is a much bigger deal than school board, was only a difference of like 86 votes or something like that. It was small, it was close. And so these kind of things matter, right? And who's going to be setting the entire tenor of the town and how the town spends its money and where it spends its interest, which sort of developers it works with. It hinges on a few dozen people deciding whether or not to vote, and when they do, who to vote for. I mean, it's sort of frightfully important, even in something like an adventure path where you're talking about sort of political intrigue. It's amazing to me how we tell stories where everything kind of hinges on the 4 to 6 player characters making big changes in the world. Well, it's not incredible, even, especially in the political arena, to think 4 to 6 people can actually make a pretty big impact on the world, even in our world. So how that carries through is absolutely the kind of thing that would inform the stories I want to tell.
Well, good. I look forward to something with some very specific themes there, maybe related to a new magic school. Who knows, right?
Ah, that is actually what I said. I have a page up right now. That's the page I've got up right now was for the magic school.
Yes.
That one. One of the things that I've really loved about Strength of Thousands is we tend to not put any requirements on the players beyond the bare minimum to play the game. For example, let's talk about the Starfinder Attack of the Swarm adventure path, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of our military adventure path. You don't have to be soldiers necessarily, or which I mean is a lowercase s and more general, you know, warriors fighting in an army, but you're kind of conscripted, right? You sort of end up fighting mm-hmm. on behalf of the army regardless. We don't want to make a whole lot of assumptions about what the characters are or where they're from or what they're doing. In Strength of Thousands, it's very pleasing to me to make a fundamental assumption that the characters all have some measure of spellcasting ability, because we give every character spellcasting ability, and mm-hmm. that the characters are fundamentally about doing the right thing and defusing tensions where they can, because that's what the school is all about and they're representatives of the school. So I don't know that I'm ever going to have a, you know, straight up good guys doing the right thing adventure path as this one I'm working on now. And I think that's kind of fun, because I am aware that down the line, without being very spoilery, we are going to have things where you are definitely not the good guys. And that's its own kind of fun, too. Mm-hmm. One of the things mm-hmm. I like is we tell so many different stories that you can pick up whichever ones are going to resonate with you. If you don't want to be the ones where you're in a magic school and everybody's fundamentally good people, yeah, all right, skip it. Go to the one where you're maybe a little on the shadier side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you have a lot of interesting, even though you're kind of going to back off the freelancing some, sounds like, you know, between your new position and this new potential, political campaign that you're doing, and hopefully, I don't know if I hope for you to win or not, because I'm worried that's going to cut into your playing time.
So you're self-interest, right? So I can't count yes. on your vote then, can I, John?
Well, I can't vote there. It's not, it's kind of limited to the area, so we can't talk up to our list, you know, our massive, you know, group of listeners to go and vote you in, because they won't be registered in your school district.
Right. That's right, true. So. It's very limited. And it's like, you know, it's the kind of people that I see in the grocery store every day, who I see on my way to church. I mean, those are the kind of people that I really want to be communicating with, resonating with. Those are the kind of people that when they say, I would like things done maybe a little bit differently, that I want to be able to hear. I don't know. I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a great opportunity. As I mentioned to a lot of people, you're really sort of a long shot when you're an unknown name going up against a very established incumbent, which is my case here. So I don't know if in your heart of hearts, you're hoping I don't win. I think that's probably most likely to happen, but we'll see. It doesn't mean I'm not going to give it a good try.
I actually, you've been doing some other things and that has not really affected our play. Somehow you managed to squeeze out at least 54 hours out of a day. So I think it'll be okay either way. But speaking of doing something different, you know, one of the things that we've been wrestling with our own group or groups that we have playing is this transition that we're making from all online to going back face to face now. And what's interesting is this particular weekend, because of the heat, I actually invited anybody new in the area to come up to my place and take advantage of the air conditioning and the beach and the water and do stuff. And sure enough, at 10 o'clock on Sunday, I was getting set up. We were playing an AP. We're actually going through this adventure path called Dawn of Flame. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I think I might know a thing about it. I might have some very personal and close experience with Dawn of Flame all the way to the end of book 5.
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, having GM'd book 5, I'm now a player starting book 5. And we were all set. We were playing it online. And two of my players, husband and wife, said, is that option still open? Because we're boiling down here in Renton and we want to come up. So they drove up and we played on our kitchen table here in Camino, set up a couple monitors, and they were on one side, I'm on the other side. Scott, our other friend, was GMing it from his basement, and we had another friend dialing in from his house. So we had it kind of this hybrid.
How interesting.
Yeah, half of us face-to-face and half of us not. Now, we're hoping that we're going to be going all face-to-face here next month. And in fact, I've been starting to prep for next weekend, 4th of July weekend, because my wife's sister's coming with some unvaccinated children because they're too young. Mm-hmm. I can't be here in Camino. So instead, I'm going to be running some games for my local group at a Vernon Wells. It's a game club in Kirkland.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
For people who are vaccinated, right?
Yes. All my group is vaccinated. So,
okay.
So we'll be doing it. We'll be running Band on the Run, and then I'll run one or two of the intro scenarios for Starfinder Season 4 for the factions and or maybe the first test. They're both relatively short, about 2.5 hours each, and okay. None of my group has played them. So this works out really well. And I was thinking, wait a second. Now here it's Monday, right? We're recording this on Monday. And by Sunday, I'll have to prep 3 scenarios for in-person play. That's like completely different than online. You know? Yeah,
totally.
It's like, that's like, I have to have maps and I have to have tokens. I got to find out where all my dice are and, you know, all my spell card aids or whatever, you know? So it's like, it's a big transition, even beyond seeing people face to face, you know, kind of shifting gears from wholly online to going face to face. It's something we've looked forward to, but it does bring some challenges with it.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. One of the biggest is that I think everybody has sort of this running assumption that, we're going to get back to how we were before and things will work exactly the same as they did before. We'll be playing at the same place at the same, I don't know, time every week, right? With exactly the same people. And I think a lot of groups, including ours, are seeing that kind of fall apart for one reason or another. Either somebody's moved, right? And if you move during the pandemic, you can stay with your group because you're just dialing in mm-hmm. online. But mm-hmm. you go back to meeting in person and they're just not there. Or maybe the house you were in for some reason isn't something you can do. The example with our group is, as you were just mentioning, we mm-hmm. used to host it at my place, but we can't have everybody over because we have unvaccinated kids in the house and that's not safe for everybody. So we have to come up with something else. And, you know, does the same time work? Well, no, somebody's picked up another mm-hmm. obligation here or there. So the same evening doesn't work. So I think a lot of people are taking a bigger step back than they expected to reset how and with whom and where they're going to meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, and for us, actually recording our actual play online, I don't know if you noticed, it seems a lot smoother, the setup and going, as long as Mark's microphone's working fine, it seems to go okay. When we're live again, you know, we got to run all the cables, get all the mics set up on the table, make sure we do sound checks all the way around.
Yeah.
You know, we're bringing in a new GM who's never done recording. So we got to make sure he's all set up. I got to figure out what type of mic he wants to use and make sure that's set up. We're going to go to a new venue and I don't even know where that's going to be yet. So we're going to have to figure out how that can get set up. I'm actually glad I'm not GMing this last book of the AP, and Jason Tondro is, because getting the map set up, you know, I'm a person, I like to print out all the maps and the AP books. I don't know what you guys are thinking when you write and develop these things. The maps are not very conducive to printing out and setting up. There are all kinds of weird sizing and shapes and stuff like that. So it makes it a little bit more challenging.
I don't know that this counts as a spoiler, right? That I otherwise want to avoid. Do they do 10-foot squares?
Well, some of them do. Yes.
We've got some of them even are 20-foot squares. How on earth do you do that?
So online, you can deal with that easy. In person, it's like, do I want to print a map that big? Or do I just say, okay, each of these, you know, 1-inch squares, that's really 20 feet across. You know, okay, so when I take a guarded step, it's kind of weird. But the other thing I was thinking of is, you know, I've been getting all these, so I'm prepping society scenarios. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about Starfinder is during this whole pandemic, everything's been digital. So you just kind of pull the map out of the out of the scenario, the PDF, and you can put it up on your favorite VTT and get running. It's fine. But most of those maps have been ones that Paizo has created. And if you're a subscriber, they've shipped those maps out to you as well.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. So I have a stack of close to, between those and Pathfinder and Classic maps, I probably have about 60 unopened maps on my shelf. And now I'll map tile packs. That's something that Starfinder's been doing a lot of. So now I'll be able to start opening things, so those up and using those rather than having to print all these custom maps, which seemed like it was the case for a lot of scenarios in the past. Now, unfortunately, with the adventure paths, they're all custom maps. There's no
right
map pack you can buy to help out. Though maybe that would be, they do these pawn sets for them. Maybe they could do custom maps that they would sell. I bet you people would buy those.
Have I ever mentioned why we don't rely on our large range of flip maps and other maps like that in adventure paths? Have we ever talked about that? I don't know that we have.
We have not. I just thought you guys were evil and mean.
No, we're not. Fair enough. No, it actually has to do with the visual look. It is a lot more work than you would think goes into making sure that there is some visual similarity across an entire adventure path or across an entire adventure path volume. Mm-hmm. So we generally get one cartographer that does every single map in an entire adventure path. And so if you've got everything that's done by the same cartographer, except these two or three maps that are kind of plunked in from the flip mat line, right, it's really kind of visually jarring in a way that gets people, is this map somehow wrong? Why is this map so different? Even if people can't really articulate, oh, well, it looks like it is different contours of the terrain or different, slightly different symbology on the map. It just looks different enough that our art team has been, you know what, let's not do it. Let's get a uniformity throughout. So if you're doing an adventure path, every single map is done by the same person. And that's part of the thematic linking that makes the whole adventure path feel like one unit.
Yeah. Well, for me, if they were willing to make print maps of those, like, it's probably too small of a run to do it. But if they were to provide print maps for the APs, I would buy them.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there are people who would.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether or not we've done a sort of a deep data dive about whether or not people would, but I suspect there's actually quite a market there.
I actually would like those more than the pawns, AP pawns that you get, which come after the last book is already out anyway.
Right, because we have to have all the art assets already in place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true.
And that's another thing, again, because I'm a super subscriber, I have all these pawn boxes that are unopened, and it's nice having specific pawns, for in-person play, which I know you don't use, but I like to use them. Mm-hmm. The downside is organizing those is hell. And I don't, I have these little divider boxes for crafts and things, and I have to figure out some system for how am I going to put things, because I don't do it, once I use them in a, for the AP, I then put them in with my general pawn collection. So then I sort them by, okay, these are all undead, these are all Sharons, so I come up with some, but the problem is there's like a million things that have no category.
Exactly.
And they don't have it.
They don't make their own category, right?
Yes. So this is uncategorized and there's 500 in them. So I have to look through the whole thing each. Yeah, that doesn't help. So now that I got to open all those pawn boxes, pawn packs and start doing it. It's like, I need to get more organization and probably clear more shelf space just so I can find things, because I like to have when I go to GM something, I like to have everything ready to go and bring it with me rather than just open up a pawn box right before I go. I'll put them all in a little set with the maps and everything and bring them with me. But that's another thing, again, as I'm going through my checklist of transitioning to face-to-face, in addition to, having to deal with the
maps.
Issues.
Yeah.
Issues of the map, but also the medical issues I have. Is everybody vaccinated? I'm going to start playing in a game store next month, but I can't, I'm not going to GM because I'm still required to wear a mask when mm-hmm. I'm in the store with other people, because there, even though my group will be vaccinated, the whole, I can't guarantee the whole entirety of the store.
Exactly. Yep.
So, and I don't feel comfortable GMing with a mask. I don't think I'll be loud enough. So, yeah. So I'll play, but I won't GM. So that's, you know, that's one of the things I'm having to worry about. And maybe other people are thinking about, you know, in stores. Now home games, you know, you have a little bit better control. And then this one particular group, because we can meet at this, this game club where two of our players are founding members, that makes it very convenient.
So, I see. Because they've got the opportunity to sort of have a little better control over who's there. So you can go in and you can say, ah, now I know for a fact that this isn't a game store where just anybody's going to be walking by. We have more control, more knowledge over who's there. And
well, they actually have a requirement. You have to send proof of vaccination before you're allowed in their building.
Oh, that makes some sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but they're also, they have several separate rooms with closing doors rather than a game store, which oftentimes has a big open space with a bunch of tables.
I see.
So even though Zulu's, the one in Bothell, they put nice dividers up between tables. So it's a little bit better. And if anybody needs, they have air conditioning too. So it won't be bad. And so I'm actually not as concerned about it, but because my team said, well, you should still wear a mask in that situation. And because you can't guarantee who's vaccinated and who's not. And nobody, like now 90% of the people anywhere you go aren't wearing masks.
Right.
So it's like, I still have to wear one. I still have to pretend like I'm not vaccinated.
And that's the quality, which I can see puts a big restriction on where you can go, who you can go with. I don't know. We'll see. Aren't we expected to be lifting more of the restriction? Not for people with, that might have specific conditions, you know, or otherwise some exceptions like you fall into. But I think generally, isn't our governor supposed to be lifting more of the restrictions on the first?
I believe actually our county is lifting them as of today.
Oh my.
Yeah, today or tomorrow, and then the state like the next day. But I think as of the first, it's going to be pretty much open for business is what it is going to look like. And again, I feel kind of awkward, but I was out doing stuff. I got to wear a mask. That's still my situation. Yeah.
Well, and there are a number of people I know whose preference is to wear a mask, right? So they're like, it doesn't matter what they're lifting, right? I feel better when I wear a mask. I feel like I need to be, you know, doing this for my own comfort. I'm going to keep on doing it. Or, you know, we're going to be living in a world where mask usage is a lot more common from now on, I think. So
yeah, and that works well for me because unlike you, I can't grow a beard or mustache, so it hides it pretty well rather than, you know, that big, massive, have you braided your dwarven beard yet?
No, my daughter has, yes. She has given it a try to do a little bit of braiding, yes. I was going to say, it hardly matters if you can't, John. I'm growing well more than enough beard for the two of us. That's
yes. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's kind of funny because, you know, around home I don't wear a mask, but you know, I went out today. Crabbing season opens up on Thursday out here. Did you know that?
Really?
That's yes.
Is that earlier than elsewhere in the county?
July 1st is
okay.
Is the
that's
norm.
That's yeah. the day generally. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been getting my stuff ready to go, and so I'm running out to the store, you know, the Ace Hardware up here, and buying some stuff. And it's like, I got to put on a mask. And it's like, oh, it's 100 degrees out and I'm wearing a mask. Yeah. And nobody else is. It's like, well, I'm going to do me.
Well, that's right. And so. I tend to wear masks most places just because I want to be, I don't want to say modeling responsible behavior, right? But even mm-hmm. though I am vaccinated and I go into stores where you don't need to be wearing a mask if you're not vaccinated, I know there are plenty of people for whom mask wearing is a thing that they still either have to do or want to do. And I want to show a little bit of solidarity there. I want, put another way, I want to be able to tell people, I'm so okay with this. I'm happy to mask or not or whatever to make other people mm-hmm. comfortable, even though I don't have to wear one personally. So
well, thank you for all of us that have to wear them. Thank you so much.
But we have, but I certainly understand about the heat, because because I have hearing aids, I can't wear most masks that go behind the ear. There's just not real estate behind my ears to put them with my glasses and my hearing aids. So I've taken to wearing gaiters, which get to really heavy around the neck, especially when it's really hot. So, but you know, it is, they're easy to pull up and then pull back down again. And they don't get in the way of my beard quite so much. It's, you know, they're nice, I guess, other than being a little bit hot.
Yeah, I saw somebody, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but it was a mask designed for people with beards like that. It was, I wish I could remember what it looked like. But when I saw it, I said, wow, that is a really good idea. I'm glad somebody thought of that. You know, so it was like a space for the beard to stick out or I don't remember what it was, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Well, I've seen people surprised because the gaiter covers my entire beard. And then when I step out of the store and lower it, I see people going, whoa, wow, that guy's got an awful lot of beard behind there.
Yes. Well, those are other things that we'll have to get used to.
True.
You know, in terms of the transition, I'm glad like most home groups, hopefully if you have a tight group of people in your home group, I would imagine that if you knew some of them could only play if you were vaccinated, even if you weren't comfortable with being vaccinated, you would probably do it.
Yeah, but because you're doing a thing for your friends. I like my friends. I want to make them feel comfortable, do the right thing, to be able to play with my friends. And yeah, I would think so too.
But I still see, you still hear there's a large percentage of the population that is concerned about taking the vaccine, not knowing long-term effects. There's been, you know, some word about some potential heart inflammation associated with a small subset of folks taking the vaccine. So I'm sure there's people concerned about taking it, and that's going to make it complicated in public venues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we are looking, you know, like there are Gen Con is not face-to-face for Paizo, but there are still face-to-face play there.
Correct.
But after that, I mean, we're looking at conventions in October, November, December, where we're potentially going face to face. And as long as the new infection count is really low, that's probably not an issue. But you know, I was talking to my doctor when I met for my 1 year about when can I go back to conventions, and one of the things he said is, well, it depends on a couple of things. So I was asking about SkullCon because I love SkullCon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, so what is the infection rate in the area that you're going? Because that's where most of the people from the convention, you know, locals might come from. And then where are other people coming from? And what's the infection rate for those folks as well? If overall it looks relatively low, then you're probably fine going then. You'll probably be okay. But if you have people coming from areas where, you know, the Delta variant is running rampant, maybe you don't want to go then.
Right, because you're going to be putting yourself on a much higher risk.
Right, and it's like, so I was like, well, you know, I know a lot of the folks that go to SkullCon, but I don't know everybody.
know? Right, so and you don't know everybody that they know, right, who they just saw 5 minutes before they come to shake your hand, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so that, I think conventions are going to be a big challenge up until it is pretty much whipped, you know, until we get the virus completely out under control one way or the other. You know, I think that'll be a challenge for some folks. But I think in-person play, I think we'll be able to do it at a small scale, in-home games, maybe in-store games. I'm still going to be running online. That's one of the things I decided. My local group meets on Sundays. At the game store. And then my old Actual Play podcast met on Wednesdays, but they moved to another day to accommodate this new GM. And so I'm actually going to GM online every other Wednesday during that open spot.
Okay.
Because there's still quite a few people that want to do online play, both locally here, but also, you know, further out, to the point that we have demand for our local Emerald City Lodge for online play. And so I said, you know what? I like to GM. I actually really like doing online. I feel pretty comfortable with it. So I'm happy to step up and continue to do that as well.
Well, great. Especially because we've well, sort of established how it can be done, that it can be done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I'm thinking of is the hybrid model. Do you remember one time when we were playing through Dead Sons when Rob had to go to Belgium or something?
Yes, I do. Where we did partially in play, partially around the table. I've done that for another couple of games as well.
Yeah. And, you know, in the past, that was kind of a clunky thing. Okay, how can we work it out or whatever? And then I'm thinking, like, this weekend where we did this hybrid model, this is like, for people that have been a year and a half online, this is like a, this is a nothing burger, right? This is easy for us to do.
Yep.
You know, get your laptop up there and we'll get going. So I think it actually will open up even more windows and doors, I guess. Mm-hmm. Windows, if you have a Windows machine. So even open up more opportunities for when people are on the road and traveling or can't be in person, you'll see a lot more groups include those folks rather than say, oh, we only can have our face-to-face folks playing.
I think that's right.
So yeah, I think the Switch, you know, it's a mindset change for me having to prepare for in-person play. I was actually thinking about, if I have to go to a convention, I print everything out. I got to bring all the maps and I got to bring all the pawns. And so that's a whole big pack of stuff you got to haul with you, you know, compared to online. It's all on your laptop. I don't even print up the scenarios now for, you know, in the last year and a half versus prior to that, I printed every scenario and had a hard copy with all the Chronicle sheets for every single scenario that came out. So I was ready to run it.
Yeah, your library, I'm sure, was amazing to be able to say, here is this stack of stuff. There you go. Now you can run this adventure. I think you're right. There are a lot of people I've talked to, very good friends of mine, who've said, look, I'm never going to play in person again. Right? Why would I? Mm-hmm. I get everything I need right here. And they love it. And I think accommodating those people isn't going to be about having them stay in online groups while other people are in face-to-face groups. I think it's, as you say, there's going to be a lot more of this hybrid model.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting. I look forward to this weekend playing face-to-face with my friends. And I look forward to our actual play going face-to-face here coming up pretty soon.
I think that'll be neat. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.